Hi guys, welcome back to Kind of Hub Podcast. My name is Ola.
I'm Yana.
And I'm Ina. How are you guys?
I'm doing so good. I'm just honestly so shocked, and I don't know why, I'm just so grateful that we're shooting episode 9.
I know, right? I can't believe we've gotten this far.
I know, because for the longest time, we were just planning this episode, and we just could not get it off the ground. Like, for a solid year, we're just recording, and we could not get it figured out. It took, like, what, 14, 15 episodes?
To launch our first one.
Exactly. Yeah. And the fact that we're still doing this, even though, like, little problems have come up, like, we've just...
But what are the statistics passing third episode? Didn't you just tell me this a couple days
ago? It's not third episode, but I'm going to paraphrase this lightly because I'm not sure if it's the exact statistic, but I'll post it. I heard it on Modern Wisdom by Chris Williamson. It's a great podcast, but he was quoting another study. And 91% of podcasters don't get past the first episode. They launch one episode, and out of those, 97% do not get past episode 21.
Well, hopefully we'll make it past 21.
I know, that's my goal. I'm like, let's just get to 21, guys.
Exactly.
No, I love doing this. I love putting out more episodes. The fact that we're just reaching the amount of people that we are.
I'm honestly shocked.
I know.
Yeah.
Like, and people actually, they are caring to listen. Right. They're enjoying the podcast. And that's what makes us keep going. That's what makes this all worth it.
I just want to say, in episode 7, when we talked about our infertility story, the amount of feedback and messages we got was so overwhelming and so amazing.
Oh, yeah.
The amount of women that go through the same thing and they just share their stories. I was just, every single message just made me so happy that people even responded and just said, I'm so sorry, or just gave me such amazing hope because they've been through something. So we just want to say thank you so much for reaching out, for being so amazing through all of
this. And for sharing the podcast.
It was our most shared and most listened to episode so far.
Thousands of people listen to it.
I know.
Yeah, and the fact that, you know, it's educating people and it's helping people. And we want to create more content for you guys that, you know, is helpful or gives you guys insight into our lives. And, you know, not everything is perfect and everyone goes through different things. And, you know, we just want to share our journeys and connect with you guys.
Oh, yeah.
But what's been going on in life lately, guys? How has your week been?
I just saw my friend give birth a few days ago.
That's right.
Yes. This is my childhood best friend.
Karina.
She was, I don't even know how to say this. Like, when you picture the perfect birth where, like, you pretty much sneeze and your baby come out, this was Karina's birth.
No, you Snapchatted, you're like, baby's coming. And
then
like,
water broke.
Five minutes later, the baby's here.
Like, she was so calm. She's amazing. She did this naturally, and she was just breathing through this. She didn't make a noise, and I'm like, all right, girl, like, there's no way this is how this should
be going. She set the standard so high. I was with her during her first birth, and I'm like, okay, that's not how it looks in movies, or I think it's a lot harder than what she makes it out
to be. She was literally making jokes. She has a contractions, then she's okay in the middle of pushing, and then she's looking at all the doctors, and she's like, so, what's up, guys? And she's like, everybody's laughing. And I'm like, okay, what? Like, you're making this look way too easy.
Anyways, our little bestie is now born. Her name is Alisa. And we're so excited to have her in our lives. We're obsessed.
She's so cute.
But the week, I mean, we are back. It's been calm like 2 weeks.
Yeah, it was nice.
We are back to our craziness. We were just looking at our calendars. We're booked up. Till June.
Till the whole month of May, we have something going on, guys.
Like, and April.
Yeah, I know.
And how are we doing this? Why are we doing this to ourselves?
I don't even know. I was like, we have nothing. Life has slowed down. This is the way that it is. And then it was like, one thing, two thing, three thing. And then it's like, oh, by the way, we're going to a gala this weekend. And it's like, oh, okay.
No, but I love this. As much as so many times I'm like, man, I'm so busy. now I'm like, I'm thankful to be this.
I crave it.
Me too.
I think we thrive off of this. And yeah. Honestly, it has just been such a great season of life. Yeah. Guys, I am just so grateful. And I think about it all the time. I'm like, if this was the way that my life was going for the rest of my life, even though it's not perfect and there are little things that come up, I wouldn't trade it for the world. Like, oh, yeah. I would be happy with this. And I don't know how that happened.
Mm-hmm. The amount of times that if I'm driving or if I'm laying in bed and I just think about how grateful I am for my life, my family, the fact that everybody's healthy, the fact that everybody's doing so well, and it just gives me so much happiness. My God, like, thank you so much for giving me.
Yeah.
I know we have such beautiful life. We have mm-hmm. so many great things ahead of us, and it's so exciting to look forward to. Yeah, there are a lot of like hard things we go through, but then there's so many great things that we really have so many blessings.
We're in a great season of our lives. And like, you know, our quote we always say is, "Не всегда так будет."
Yes, I have it tattooed.
Tattooed.
We always say this, even when things are well, не всегда так будет. It won't always be this way.
Yeah.
But when things are bad, it won't always be this way. And it keeps me going. So mm-hmm. right now, happy season of our lives, exciting season yeah. of our lives. We gotta enjoy it.
But can we also talk about, you were talking about praying in the car. I don't know why. I feel like, you know, in the Bible, it talks about the secret place. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's my car.
Me
like,
too. Me
every too. Day, that's my favorite thing to do is like, it's my ritual. I get in the car and I love to pray first thing in the morning in my car. Pray for my driving.
Yeah, you definitely Lord need knows to pray I for need that. It.
There's been so many situations that I'm like, thank you, Jesus, mm-hmm. for just letting me get to work today. But I just feel like those are the moments when I feel closest to God. Like, I will be driving, and it's like as if Jesus is like in the car with me.
Jesus, take the wheel.
So anyways, as we're talking about this happy season of our lives, mm-hmm. let's go back a little bit. It wasn't always this.
Yeah, and you've seen that так было.
You've seen that так было. So, Yana, mm-hmm. there was an event that changed the trajectory of the way you looked at your life. Can you tell us a little bit more about that day?
We're going to go deep.
I'm just going to hop right into it. But essentially, this day, I was 15 years old. I was a sophomore in high school. I was living in Colorado at the time. And during this time, my mom had been missing for a while. I don't remember if it was exactly 1 or 2 weeks, but it had been quite a while. And my stepdad had filed a missing persons report at this point. So it was just him, me, and then my little sister. So I'm just going to school all these days as if nothing is going on. I was definitely a nerd in the sense that like I cared so much about my grades and just like pretending like everything was fine. And I lived walking distance from school, probably less than a mile. And I was feeling really sick. I don't remember what exactly. I thought I was just maybe getting a cold and I wasn't feeling good, maybe a migraine. So I just decided I'm just going to walk home from school, just literally leave. It's third period. And I walk home alone. About halfway through my walk, I had collapsed in the street. I don't know how long I was down, how it happened. All I remember is just waking up in the street. There was snow on the ground. And I look at, like, I find my phone and I look at my reflection in my phone. I'm struggling to breathe. And my face is twice the size. My face is twice the size. My throat is really tight. And my tongue is so swollen, like if I talk, it's like that, like not kidding. And my skin, my body feels like it's on fire. I can't feel it anymore. And I just feel like I can barely move. And I was just so scared.
Was this the first time that ever happened to you?
Yeah. I mean, I had never experienced anything like that before.
And what do you think caused this?
Well, so I was just in a state of shock, I think. There was so much stress and everything going on in my life, especially with my mom going missing. I think that was just like the cherry on top and the straw that broke the camel's back. And for some reason, when that event happen. And like the first thing I thought of doing was not calling 911, was not calling my stepdad, my dad, or anyone. I decided to try to call my mom. And I had been calling her time and time again every single day, and it was just going straight to voicemail. So I don't know why I was doing that. I called my mom, and she had just gotten home.
Hmm. Where was she? Do you know where she was?
I don't know.
You still don't know?
To this day, I don't know.
She was just missing for 2 weeks.
Yeah. So she had just gotten home, and I call her. I don't know how she understood me, but she drove so fast, and I remember we tried to shove Benadryl down my throat, and we booked it to the hospital, and the first thing they did was inject me with an EpiPen. I went into anaphylactic shock, and I was having an allergic reaction. And they were like, you know, what did you eat? What happened? And I hadn't, you know, like, really, I don't even think I ate that day. So I was like, there's really nothing new or different that I could think of that caused this allergic reaction. They're running all these tests, and half of my body is numb. The whole left side of my body is completely numb. I can't walk properly. I can't move properly. And we don't know what's going on. So they decide to admit me into the hospital. And I think my first stay was, I was there about a week.
Wow. They were just doing a lot of tests and yeah, trying to figure it out.
Yeah, they're, I remember the team of neurologists came in, and I was like, this is nothing like Grey's Anatomy. and I remember, like, they were coming in with the interns and doing all the tests, and the doctor telling me, he's like, you know, these could be symptoms of a brain tumor, because they couldn't figure out what I was allergic to. There were just so many strange symptoms, strange pains. And so we're running every MRI, CT scan. They sent my blood for rare disease testing to Johns Hopkins, Mayo Clinic. And the scariest part is you always think, like, okay, if I'm sick, if something is wrong with me, I'm just going to go to the hospital. The doctors know what they're doing.
They'll figure it out.
They'll figure it out. It's like you almost think, like, they just run a test and it tells you, bleep, this is what's wrong with them. Yeah. But that's the thing. That's not how it works. Mm-hmm. So the fact that I was there seeing so many doctors and nobody knew what was wrong with me, what was causing it, it was flaring up again while I'm in the hospital. I'm having another allergic reaction in the hospital.
How many episodes like that have you had since then? Was this an ongoing thing?
Yeah. So after that happened, after about a week of them not getting anywhere or doing anything, they just had me on steroids to try to stabilize my body. And then I was like, I'm ready to go home. I told the doctors, I was like, this, you guys can't figure out what's wrong with me. There's nothing happening. I'm literally just laying in a bed. I'm ready to just go home. And they sent me home with EpiPens. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they were like, maybe this could be because of stress or something.
I remember when you would call us and tell us these things. I'm not going to lie. I thought you were just being a little drama queen.
Everyone thought I was faking it.
Yeah. I thought you were faking it.
Until I saw the swollen tongue, the swollen face. I'm like, girl, you're not okay.
Every time you call or send me a Snapchat, you would be in the hospital. I'm like, girl.
Yeah. I thought you were doing this for attention. Yes, your parents were going, well, they have been divorced already at that time, but I'm like, is this girl trying to get more attention? What is going on in her life? You're a teenager. Mm-hmm. I was already married at this point. But what was your mindset during this time?
Well, that time was particularly frustrating because I remember after the hospital stay, they were like, okay, you need to see this specialist, this specialist, this specialist. So it was just doctor appointment after doctor appointment, and nobody could figure out what's wrong with me. Every new doctor that I'm seeing and I'm telling them about what happened, even though a lot of it happened in a hospital setting, they were like, no. Mm-hmm. Like, they were trying to say, I don't think that's what happened. It's not a big deal. Essentially, everybody was gaslighting me into saying that's not what was happening.
That's so
and
crazy.
And I felt crazy. I didn't want to be sick. I didn't want to feel that way. And I was just in a constant fear of going into another anaphylactic shock episode, allergic reaction. Like, what if my throat fully closes up and I don't get an EpiPen? And I just stop breathing.
That's terrifying.
And they can't figure out what's causing it exactly, what's going to fix it? I thought, you know, there's got to be some medication they could just give me. And so at this point, I'm thinking, I'm going to die. Like, I'm 15. No doctor can figure out what's wrong with me. I can't figure out how to stop this. At this point, I'm going to die. And I was like, I just need to make the best out of my life that I can.
So, okay, now time has gone by. Looking back, do you know what caused... Because this was going on for how many years?
So that probably went on consistently for almost 2 years. And essentially, it happened at the worst and best time of my life. So I started struggling with panic attacks before. And I think,
before the first episode?
Yeah. And I think that those happening more and more consistently is what caused it. Because you think mental health is mental health. It's not going to come out physically. Like, it's in my mind. Who cares? You're going to live. So for me, I started struggling with panic attacks, I think around 12 or 13.
What caused them?
Just a combination of things. I do believe that the biggest thing for me was I struggled with perfectionism a lot. I remember the first thoughts I was having was, why are my parents divorced? Or like, why is my life like this and everyone else's life is perfect? You know, being a teenager, especially social media being so new, and you're looking at everybody's perfect lives on Instagram, and everyone has, you know, these amazing families and parents, and I'm just struggling day in and day out. So I was comparing myself, my life, to other people, and I was like, why don't I have that? And so I was trying to be perfect in any aspect that I had control over. I was trying to be perfect in school. I was like, I need to get a 4.0. I need to do everything that I can. Anything that I was involved in, I was trying to be perfect.
Anything you had control over.
Yeah.
You wanted it to be
even
perfect.
My eating, I was working out. I was like literally trying to control my body, my like academics, anything that I possibly could. I was so skinny during that time because I was just so obsessed with trying to make myself perfect and look perfect. And I think that that caused me so much anxiety. I started having panic attacks, true panic attacks, curled up in a ball in my room, like just shaking, dry heaving, basically just sobbing. And this got to the point where it was essentially happening daily.
So what would cause your panic attack?
Yeah. I was just in a constant state of anxiety.
Maybe because you're the older sibling, you're trying to look over your young siblings.
It was a combination of a lot of different factors. I was the oldest sibling. I'm the oldest of five.
At that point, you were the oldest of three.
But I did feel like I had a lot of weight on my shoulders. My mom was kind of in and out. And I was living with my mom at that time. And so I felt a lot of pressure to get things in order, to be in charge. I had a lot of responsibility already at that point, or I felt that I did. And I think I even took on more than I needed to.
At such a young age.
You did. And when things weren't going right and I felt like I didn't have control over it, I did not know how to handle it. And at that point, too, I wasn't really going to church anymore. My mom had gotten married to an atheist. And just the church that I grew up in, it wasn't a good fit either. And I was just very confused. I had no hope for where my life is going to go. And, you know, then it started to come out in a physical way. I didn't know how to deal with my stress, how to deal with my anxiety or my depression. So I think it just started manifesting physically. At first, I do remember it started with little hives. I had just like little hives and I was like, whatever, like I'm not going to make a big deal out of this. And then I started getting migraines and I just started feeling tired all the time. And I was like, you know, it's just another day, pick up and go on. And then it gets so bad to the point that you can't ignore it anymore and you deal with it. But the thing is, after I came from the hospital and I was just, you know, they couldn't figure it out for me, I was probably back in the hospital at least once a month.
I remember that.
Everybody in the emergency room knew me. Typically, if you're injected with the EpiPen, they keep you in the hospital for monitoring. They're like, you know the drill. You can go home. Yeah. And so at that point, we lose everything too. My mom, what do you mean? My mom and my stepdad go through a divorce. Mm. She sells the house and decides we're going to move to California. I lose everything I own, my friends, where I lived, my school. I essentially am dropped out of high school at this point in my sophomore year.
You were still 15 at this point?
I was 15. And then I end up having to move in with my dad because California didn't work out with my mom. And so I'm just starting life over. I lost everything. I don't have my good grades at school anymore. And I'm in the worst position I'd been in. I don't have my friends. Mm-hmm. And I remember first moving in with my dad, and we got into an argument, and I just started breaking out into the worst allergic reaction. And he didn't really believe me either.
Yeah.
He was like, there's no way. Like, pridumala.
Pridumala for sure.
It was pakoisa.
Yeah. And I remember, like, every time this started happening, I started taking pictures of myself and my body, because I was like, nobody believes me. Mm-hmm. And when I would go to the hospital too, if I already stabbed myself with an EpiPen and it goes down, then they're like, no, like that doesn't, why would it happen? And then so I'd show them photos.
Did you always carry an EpiPen?
Yeah, I started carrying an EpiPen always. And after that point, I remember the allergic reaction after that, I couldn't find my EpiPen, and I was like, I'm just going to take Benadryl and go to sleep and hope that I'm fine. And I was fine. So after that, I was like, okay, maybe this is something I could deal with at home. And I remember like going into another one and telling my dad, and he was like, it's fine. Like, you're fine. Like, just like gaslighting me almost, but I was like, okay, I'm fine.
I'm fine.
And like, I went upstairs and I was like, I'm done. Like, I'm done going to hospitals. I'm done dealing with this. I'm done living in fear of this. And I was like, I'm so tired of my life being in this constant state of anxiety, stress. And that was the point when, like, I just decided to pray. Like, there was nothing else that was working for me. There's nothing else that I could put my faith into. I had no hope. And I was just like, God, help me. Like, that was my moment of surrender.
Mm-hmm.
And because I was already trying yoga, breathing techniques, and it had kind of helped, but nothing really worked. And after that day, I hadn't experienced another episode.
Really?
Wow.
You surrendered your anxiety.
Yeah. And I had just started kind of going to church with my dad on the weekends, to Flatirons in Colorado. Amazing church.
Oh, yeah.
I still listen to the sermons. No, and I remember they had baptisms coming up, like a month in. And in the culture that we grew up in, you can't just go get baptized.
Right.
Oh, no.
There's a whole process to get baptized.
Yeah, it took us 10 months. For all our classes, and then you get baptized. Mm-hmm. You have to pass the tests, and then...
Yeah, no, I came in normal clothes. There was a little pool on stage, and I was like, I came, and I was like, I know I want to get baptized today. And I just went, and I got baptized, and I remember everyone being like, you got baptized now, like, you need to not sin anymore, basically. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
I used to think, once you are baptized, you're not going to struggle with anything. You're not going to sin.
You're going to be a perfect Christian.
Exactly. I thought it was going to be so easy.
Well, you have to become a perfect Christian to get baptized.
Well, yes.
In the culture that we grew up in.
Yes, yeah. You have to be perfect. You cannot sin the whole 10 months you're doing the courses. And if you fail once, you're out. You can't get
baptized. You have to wait till next year.
You have to wait till next year.
This one was a completely different concept. And they were like, hey, you know, if you want to publicly declare that you believe that Jesus died on the cross and publicly declare your faith and you want to get baptized, you can come get baptized. Like, that is the only requirement. And I was like, I want to do that. Like, I have the desire to go do that. And I did that. And it's not like anything after that really changed. Like, there's almost like this expectation that you go get baptized and there's this like crazy spiritual feeling. Mm-hmm. And I mean, like, you know, obviously it's a big moment, but you're not just like, I'm Mrs. Holier than thou all of the sudden. Mm-hmm. And I remember I still struggled after that. Mm-hmm. I loved Jesus. I knew that. And I was a Christian, but I had a hard time even considering myself a Christian because I didn't think that I lived up to the standards of Christianity, of what we grew up in. Mm-hmm. But even looking back, I'm like, I was nowhere near in my faith or understanding is where I am now. But that doesn't mean I wasn't a Christian.
Of course. And it doesn't mean that Jesus loved you any less.
100%. And it's like only about 2 years ago now is when I feel like I really started building a relationship with God and reading my Bible and understanding what the gospel truly means. But that doesn't mean that before that, I wasn't a Christian.
So how do you think you overcame the anxiety, the stress? When did things start turning around for you? After you got baptized, or did things still keep happening?
So around the time that I got baptized is when certain things did start turning around for me. And that's the thing. There's no one thing in your life that's going to take it from point A to point B like this.
Oh, yeah.
There's no magic pill that is going to solve your problem. No magic habit that you're just going to start one day and the next day you wake up, you're like, I went to the gym yesterday and I ate good and I woke up and I lost 10 pounds. Like, that's lit. I wish that's how life worked, but it's not. And it's hard. And I was just at church yesterday and our pastor preached an amazing message and he was talking about growth. He's preaching from the parable that Jesus talks about in Matthew 13 when the farmer plants the seeds, the good seeds, mm-hmm. and the enemy comes while he's sleeping and he plants the weeds.
Mm-hmm.
And he was using a lot of analogies for growth and he was talking about how when you plant a seed, it doesn't just start growing up. First it grows down. It plants roots,
yes.
And then it grows up. And that's the biggest thing is you start to shift your mindset. And I think for me, I started, you know, I surrendered my life to Christ. And I was like, there's something bigger than just me. I can't do life on my own. There's got to be more to life than this.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that. I knew that deep down. And once I gave into that, it's not like I magically just started growing up and things went well for me. There were slight changes that were better, but in the day-to-day, it's not that I really noticed it. I did have more peace. You know, God really does send you a peace that surpasses all understanding, and like that I can testify to.
Absolutely.
Like no other, but it's like I was still falling into sin, and I still do. Mm-hmm. Like nobody's perfect.
Of course.
But I think I took that time to go backwards, to grow down, and I learned from it tremendously. And I think more recently is when I started to grow, and that's how it goes with almost any habit, with anything that you do, anything that you start. Sometimes you even go backwards after starting to do something better, and you have to just continue to water that seed, water that plant, and allow it to grow. And I think some of the things that I did was, the biggest things that helped me were, I didn't trust myself. And I was obsessed with perfectionism, and then like things weren't going right. So I was like, you know, I just can't trust myself. I'm not good enough. And I had these really negative self thoughts in my head constantly. I was so mean to myself. And that was one of the things that I decided I'm going to change. And I was like, I'm going to start paying attention to my thoughts.
Mm.
Every time I think a negative thought about myself, I'm going to think a positive thought.
Wow. I love that.
And so it's like I was really insecure about my weight that I had gained. And I would just, I remember I would look in the mirror and I'm like, I feel like a cow. And then I would think, I would think in my head, I'm like, no, like I'm still beautiful. Like I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. And it's like, there are little things. It's like, oh, I'm dumb. No, I'm not dumb. I'm trying my best. And it's hard, but it's like once you start paying attention to those negative thoughts, replacing them and giving yourself a positive thought. And at first it seems stupid. You're like, am I a crazy person? I'm going back and forth with myself.
And I think social media has a big impact on that. Yes. Because I think anybody listening to this, girls especially, we love to compare our lives to others and these influencers. Social media is fake.
Face app.
It is so fake. We post our best selves in there.
The highlights.
All the highlights. The best photos, the best outfits. Are you going to post when you're sad, you're crying, you're having a worse day? No.
Some do.
Some do, but I mean, they post like their best cry. They're like,
yeah, I'm crying right now. No, but really, that's the sad thing about social media now. It's like the teenagers where if you're not mentally there, it can really affect you. Because
you think it's real life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You look at these perfect photos, these vacations that people are always on, and this perfect life and these expensive clothes they have. And then you're like, wow.
Why is my life not like that?
Well, people used to grow up before social media. And the kids that you know are mostly just like the kids in your neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And they live similar lives to you. And they have similar families and backgrounds. And like even financial statuses as you. And, you know, maybe some people have slightly nicer things. But it's like if you're growing up middle class, you probably don't have friends that are going on private jets and hanging out with the Kardashians. You're 13 now. And you're on social media and you're seeing another 13-year-old on a private jet.
Yeah.
And you're comparing yourself to that life when that wasn't a real thing before. It's like something you would see maybe once on a magazine, you know?
That's true. Yana, what is some advice that you can give somebody who's struggling with mental health?
I think the biggest thing that I would say, seek God in everything, but also another big thing is take care of your body. A lot of people don't realize how interconnected the body and the brain is. I think it's about 85% of all of the chemicals and hormones, mostly the chemicals made for your brain, are made in your gut. Mm-hmm. So the way that you're eating, the food that you're eating, actually affects your mental health and your anxiety. The content that you're consuming, constantly looking at the news or conspiracy theories. I love a good conspiracy theory, guys. Yeah,
yes. You're getting me into that because lately I've been watching so many things. But that.
You have to set boundaries and limits with yourself, because if you're constantly looking at the negative of the world, you're going to think about the negative of the world. And if you're eating like crap and you're just feeding your body McDonald's and you're not going in the sun and you're not working out, your brain is going to struggle to produce the chemicals that make you happy. Like, I promise you, if you're struggling with your mental health and you're feeling sad, pull yourself out of that bed and maybe go for a long walk in the sun. Maybe go do a workout. Maybe just start eating a little bit better and like just start taking care of yourself and taking care of your body and talking nicer to yourself, even though it feels uncomfortable, even though you don't want to do it. Like, your body is going to be living in fight or flight mode until you decide to reparent yourself, to be there for yourself, and to also, you know, give it to God, because you don't have to go through it alone. Like, You can get an accountability partner and go to somebody and be like, hey, this is something I'm really struggling with. I want to start maybe taking care of myself a little bit better. I want to start going to the gym. Would you be willing to start going to the gym with me? Or like, would you want to keep me accountable? And I think just making those small changes in your life can make such a dramatic change. But it's not going to happen overnight.
Oh, no.
It's not. You have to consistently show up for yourself. And I think another thing that will build so much self-confidence in a person, and it's what helped me bring my confidence back, is keeping promises to yourself, staying true to yourself. I read this book. It was Girl, Wash Your Face by Rachel Hollis.
Love that book.
I started with drinking a glass of water first thing in the morning. You start
warm with water or just cold water?
Just a glass of water. That's it. First thing in the morning, before looking at my phone, before doing anything, I'm going to drink a glass of water. And that's what I started with. And it's like, I did that consistently for, I think it was like 20, 21 days. And it's like, okay, let's add on another habit. And it's like, you build that confidence in yourself. You're like, okay, I'm doing something that I said I'm going to do. And you start with something so small. And then it's like, you then maybe you add on, I'm going to go to the gym once a week. Mm-hmm. And you show up for yourself once a week. And you're like, maybe now I'm going to go twice a week. I'm going to fold my clothes every night before bed and make sure I don't have clothes lying on the floor. Mm-hmm. And you're going to mess up. You're going to have your weeks where your room is still a mess and you don't show up for yourself. And you have to say, hey, I fell off the wagon. It's okay to pick myself up again. It's okay to have grace. Mm-hmm. And that's what grace is all about. And to start over.
Yeah. The smallest habits, though, make the biggest difference.
I need to try that and wake up earlier. If I can wake, I mean, I know if I really set my mind to it, maybe I could wake up at 5:30 or 6 a.m. and go to the gym. But like, when I think about that, I'm like, why would I want to do that to myself? I enjoy my routine. I go to the gym around 4 or 5 every evening. But to do that in the morning and wake up early, I have definitely woken up early. Like, we would go to the beach for a sunrise, but it would be like 6:30. And then I come home and I'm like, well, what do people do this early? What do you do? How do you start your... Maybe because I start work later. And mm-hmm. to me, it's like, well, what do you do for these couple hours? Yes, I'll have breakfast. I'll read. But then what? I'll sit on the couch. I was literally sitting at a point. I'm like, I'm not going to turn on TV or anything. But like, it was 7:30 or 8. And I'm like, okay, well, have a couple more hours. Well, like, what am I supposed to do? I think
it's such a struggle to keep up with something like that. Like, I started going to the gym at 6 a.m. But it's like, now I'm going maybe 3-4 times a week because it's so hard to stay consistent. Mm-hmm. And it's like some weeks I just, maybe I'll go once because I go to bed at like 2 a.m. one night.
Why are you going to bed so late?
Things happen. Okay, but I want to ask you guys, I want to hear your perspective. What was your view on mental health growing up?
If I'm going to be completely honest, I thought, you know, I would hear some people talk about depression or their stress. I thought people were...
lying?
I don't know if I would say lying, but...
or exaggerating.
Exaggerating. And I'm like, well, snap out of it. Mm-hmm. You're stressed, snap mm-hmm. out of it.
Yeah.
You're depressed, get out of it. I remember I had a friend who would literally tell me these stories and how she was feeling so depressed. And inside I would think, well, cheer up. Like, I know that sounds so wrong, but I couldn't understand
that. Well, it sounds that simple.
Yeah. It's like, what do you mean? Just be happy. And then I've experienced some moments in my life where I was like, wow, I've experienced anxiety, stress, my body going through, I've had hives not that long ago. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, I just remembered those moments when I was younger and I used to think about that people. I'm like, what do you mean stress? Like, why are you going through that? Why are you putting yourself in this situation? I don't know. Like, I couldn't understand it until I went through it myself.
How do you deal with it? How do you deal with those emotions or feelings of depression or anxiety when they come around?
Well, the recent thing that happened is our mom was diagnosed with breast cancer, which was so, so hard. Yeah. I was with her at that appointment when they told her the news and I had to translate that. And it was horrible. It was so horrible and scary. And this is when I started just having these like panic attacks and anxiety. And I knew that she had to get surgery. So she was scheduled for surgery. And the night before I knew, you know, we were taking her in the morning, I could not sleep. I had so much anxiety and freaking out. And I was laying in bed. And then I'm just like, I know the answer to all of this is go to God. He's the only one who's going to help me overcome this and help me.
Yeah.
Just.
It's in his hands.
It is.
Yeah.
So I remember I opened this guy that I've been following on TikTok, and he does these devotionals. And this devotional comes up. I just literally opened my TikTok and he comes up just right before I prayed about it. And he just says, my child, give me all your anxiety. And then he started talking about just give it all to God. And then I just started crying. Oh my God, like you just spoke to me. You just told me like, give it all to me. I'm going to take care of it and just go to sleep. And I went to sleep with so much peace, and I woke up in the morning for the surgery, and we were at the hospital, and the whole time I'm like, I have so much peace. This is almost scary.
Like, you almost feel bad. Yes, you're like, yeah. I'm like, feel
we
worse.
All had peace, including mom. My mom, she was so calm.
As they were, like, getting her ready, she was calm. And
she's such a prayer warrior.
She is. She's such a great example of a godly woman, and I look up to her so much. And she kept telling us, she's like, why are you guys worried? Mm-hmm. Like, it's okay. There's a reason why I'm going through this. And I'm like, it's not fair. Like, you should not be going through this. Mm-hmm. And she recently finished her radiation, and she's
doing amazing.
She's doing amazing. God. Yeah, thank God. And again, if I didn't have God in my life,
where does your hope come from?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I just wonder. I mean, I know we have a lot of listeners who are not believers, and I just want to know, what do you do when you're in a stressful situation? Who do you pray to, I guess, or who do you ask for help?
Mm-hmm.
I always wondered that. I know a lot of people do yoga, meditations, they turn on music, and those are, you know,
they're good temporary fixes, and I think mm-hmm. they can help in the moment. Like, when I'm going through, like, a period of sadness or, like, something really tough, a tough emotion, I think it's really important to allow yourself to feel that emotion. Like, sometimes you go through feelings and you're like, I shouldn't feel stressed, I shouldn't feel sad. And it's like, you can't do that to yourself either. Mm-hmm. It's okay to feel an emotion mm-hmm. and to be like, okay, I'm sad right now. And then what? Like, let's move on. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna, like, I think there's a scientific fact that emotions only actually last for 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. Anything past those 5 minutes of sadness is you choosing to continue that sadness. You're choosing to continue thinking about that sadness. You're choosing to keep that going. And when you do that consistently, your brain creates a neural pathway, and you actually can become addicted to feeling an emotion. You can become addicted to feeling adrenaline. You can become addicted to feeling sadness. You can become addicted to feeling anger. And we choose our emotions, and we have our consistent ones. And so you need to be mindful of that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just so you guys know, Yana knows the most random facts. Like, you will ask her anything, she's like, did you know the 5% of people? Like, I'm sorry.
That's my favorite thing.
That's one of my favorite things about you, Yana.
Yeah, the most random facts. I love it. Like, you educate me.
No, I went through a period of time where I was obsessed with listening to different TED Talks, and now uh-huh. for me it's podcasts.
Yeah.
And so I just take in so much information, and I retain the most random facts.
You retain information really well. Yeah. I struggle with that. I hear it, but it goes out the
me
other
too.
Ear.
Me too. If I have to, like, tell you what you just told me, I'm like, I don't know how to tell you. I struggle with that. Yeah. I do.
No. Okay, I want to go to Ina.
Mm-hmm.
Ina, I want to hear, what was your view on mental health growing up?
Honestly, I don't think I can't really remember struggling with it, like depression, anxiety.
But you
I
didn't
used to
think about it at
no,
all?
No, not at all. I didn't think anxiety is real.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe depression, I don't know, but, like, thank God I never went through it. But anxiety, when I would hear people have, like, a panic attack or anxiety, and I'm like, what is that and why are you going through that?
Mm-hmm.
Until I became a foster mom.
Yeah.
I have experienced probably my first panic attack, and I was freaking out. I'm like, am I having a heart attack? What's going on? And I had to, like, breathe it into a bag. It was so bad. So, and then I got introduced to Valerianka. That my
Valerian
mom
root, guys.
And I would just, like, put these, like, valerian roots drops into my tea to calm me down. Couldn't do caffeine or anything. And I'm like, this is anxiety. Some days I would go to bed, I would go to sleep, and I wouldn't know what to expect that night. Teenagers aren't that easy, you know? So that's honestly at age 28, 29 is when I think I started experiencing what anxiety actually mm-hmm. is. But with that, I would go to sleep, pray to God, God protect us this night, or, you know, help us overcome whatever we're gonna overcome this week or whenever.
So. Let me just tell you a twin fact about that, the anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when Ina did have her foster kids, and I was at the airport, and my flight was getting delayed, and I was like, okay, whatever, I was fine. But I remember I randomly just, I started shivering. Mm-hmm. I started going through this, like, stress or anxiety, I don't know, but I was shivering. Mm-hmm. I'm like, what is happening to my body? Like, I don't, yes, the flight is delayed by an hour, whatever. That's not what was causing my stress. I call Ina. She's not answering me. I call her again. I'm like, you need to call me. She answers. She's freaking out. She's crying. And one of the foster kids was doing something he shouldn't be doing. And I'm like, Ina, I'm literally like shivering and freaking out.
I would, like, the crazy part is I would be shivering too.
Yeah,
that was like, I would be going to bed or something would happen, and out of nowhere, you know when you have a fever, you shiver from the cold. I would be speaking to my husband or talking to him, and I'm like, I'm shivering, I can't talk. So
no, anxiety is a tough thing to deal with, and even as a Christian, like, you still go through anxiety.
Absolutely.
And as people, like, we will always go through mountains and valleys, and like we said, не всегда так будет, it means it won't always be like this. And whether it's happy, whether it's sad, this life, we will not be living this life
and
forever.
I would be going through that, and I don't want anyone who's listening thinking that my journey was that bad. No way, not at all. I had some amazing moments in our foster care journey, but of course I've had some tough nights, you know, teenagers, any home, you know, they go through things. We've caused our parents enough stress too. So I completely understand my mom now, but I'm sure she had to live off of Valerianka a lot too. But you know, that's life, and не всегда так будет, you get through it. Things are great, things are hard.
I think that's one of the tough things with culture and society now, because everyone's afraid of feeling a bad emotion. You think, oh, I should not be feeling anxiety, I should not be feeling sadness. I think it's in our culture more,
because we don't talk about our feelings in our culture. Slavic people, they don't have depression, they don't go through stress or anxiety.
Well, they don't say, well, they say,
sorry,
they,
what I mean is they don't talk about it.
But maybe it's just our family. I don't know if it's just Slavic people.
I think that's one end of the spectrum. But I think looking at American culture and more of what I grew up in school and hearing on social media and things like that, it's, everyone's talking about, oh, I'm on this SSRI, this medication, antidepressants. Oh, this person was just in the mental hospital. Oh, I'm in therapy. And it's just all this talk about mental health, and everybody had a thing. And I think, you know, it's great that it's normalized, but I think it also went to the point where it's like, oh, what's your thing?
Mm-hmm.
Are you depressed? And it's like, oh, if you're feeling sad, does that mean you should automatically go to your doctor and say, I'm depressed, please put me on a medication?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're feeling a bad emotion and you're struggling to deal with it because you're not taking good care of yourself, you're not, you know, you've got tough things going on at home with your family, I'm sorry, but a medication, yes, it might help you get through it in that time, but it's not going to solve the root issue.
Absolutely.
What are you going to do? Be on that medication for the rest of your life? Like, no, you need to deal with the root cause of the problem. And for a lot of people, they don't look at that anymore. They're like, I'm feeling a tough emotion, and instead of dealing with my life or fixing it or looking at other avenues, I'm just going to go into medication.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's like the opposite end of the spectrum. So we have people who don't address it at all and just suffer.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have people who over address it and shouldn't and should suffer a little bit. And, you know, you need to find that middle ground.
Agreed.
And I think that that's what we struggle with as a society is moderation. Like, people love to go to extremes with anything, politics, your views on religion even, or just any aspect of life. People will go crazy and take something and run with it. I think we're gonna end this here for the week. This episode, I'm glad I got to talk about a lot of this stuff. I know a lot of people do struggle with mental health and a lot of different things, and I don't want to minimize that for anybody. Everybody goes through their struggles. It's okay to go through your struggles. But whatever support, encouragement that you need, I hope and pray that you just, you seek it, that you look for that help and that support in that community around. And also reach out to us. You know, we love to talk with you guys, and like, we want to go through life with other people. We want to build a community of people around us. None of us are perfect people. And so I love just being able to start conversations around this.
I love the little community we've been building.
I know.
It makes me so happy.
I know it's just the beginning for us, but man, it makes me so happy.
You guys are all so sweet and so encouraging. And I want to hang out with all of you.
So seriously, guys, every message, we love reading it.
Means the world to us.
It really does.
The littlest thing. Yeah. You know?
I'm happy I got to go into a little bit of my story. Mm-hmm. I have a lot more that, you know, to give context on and a lot more to share. And maybe we'll go into that on future episodes.
No, Yana, seriously, the life you had as a child and a teenager and the things you have overcome and the girl you are now, the beautiful, amazing girl that I look up to now.
I appreciate that.
It is such an amazing thing to see what God has done in your life. From the broken, horrible childhood that you have had, the crazy stories I hear about your life, the more I hear, I'm like, how did this happen to you? And how are you the way you are now? You can write a book, but I'm sure through your life, you can encourage so many other girls or people, the things you've been through and how God has been there for you and transformed your life.
Yeah, I know you shared such a small little story. You kind of just jumped into it through your anxiety, but there's so much that goes in your childhood, and I'm sure one day you'll share it if you're comfortable, but what you overcome is amazing, and it's all, I give it all to God. He was there for you, and amen when I hear that. Your stories, it's absolutely heartbreaking to hear, but I'm just so proud of you.
I mean, honestly, anyone who's going through anything super tough right now, just know that there is a light at the end of the tunnel. Like, I remember going through things and I was like, this is never going to get better.
Mm-hmm.
And just know, and let's make this our word of the week. It's going to be a whole sentence, but не всегда так будет. It won't always be this way.
Yeah.
Nothing stays the same forever. Every season changes.
Yes.
And just if you're going through a winter season, if you're going through a tough season, just stick through it. Mm-hmm. And just know that like spring is right around the corner. Even though you can't see the light at the end of the tunnel yet,
it is
there. Yes. And so that's our word/sentence of the week.
Не всегда так будет.
Не всегда так будет. But yeah. We love you guys. And
thank you so much for listening.
Thank you for your support. Thank you for listening.
Bye.